I don't know why they don't use this for Larry McReynolds, the Speed Racer theme, every time they bring you on, Larry, on Fox. It would work.
I think it's the perfect fitting, absolutely.
In the Garage, our podcast today, we're talking with Larry McReynolds, and the kind of after Daytona, and now, in my mind, we get to the real racing with Atlanta and these mile-and-a-half tracks. Isn't it kind of, this is the week where we're going to find out who's really got what for the season?
Well, it's kind of the beginning of that, Jim. You know, Atlanta is such a unique racetrack. I know it's a mile-and-a-half track, and, you know, close to a third of our season is raced on mile-and-a-half tracks, but Atlanta's pretty unique. The surface is 21 years old. It's very worn out. It has little to no grip. So I guess what I tell the race fans is if your favorite driver goes to Atlanta and really runs well or does not run well, you know, be careful to hang your hat just on that racetrack. What I always say is, you know, let's get through Daytona. Let's get through Atlanta. Let's get through the three West Coast races, and then we come back to the East Coast for one short track race at Martinsville, and then we take a break for Easter. Once we get through Martinsville, and I know that's a lot of races, that's six races, but it covers every type of track we go to, with the exception of maybe a road course, then I think we have a pretty good snapshot of who's in trouble, who's got work to do, who's in pretty good shape, and honestly, who's going to be probably the guys to contend for a championship.
Going back to you talking about the indications we got, one of the indicators to me when I was watching Daytona was the young guys have speed and talent, but maybe not that patience that comes with experience. Like Chase Elliott had no business dropping down on Brad at that point in the race. Is that fair?
Well, I can't say it was all the young guys. I saw a lot of our veterans, some of our champions, that maybe did not exemplify the greatest patience. You know, I look back at Brad Keselowski in the dual race. You know, he tried to go into a hole that wasn't even remote.
Oh, that's true. No, you're right, Larry. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, obviously our group of young drivers, we're pretty excited about them. I think that one thing that makes them very unique is they all are in very fast competitive race cars. And if you look back at Daytona Speed Weeks, other than Johnny Sauter, who is a champion veteran in the Truck Series, and other than Brad Keselowski, who won the Clash, Speed Weeks was pretty much dominated by our young group of drivers. When you think about Alex Bowman and the 88 car set on the pole, Ryan Blaney, Chase Elliott won the dual races. And then I even look at Austin Dillon, that's still one of our young guns because he's only 27 years old, winning the Daytona 500. Yeah, they'll learn patience. And in this place we're going this weekend, if you're not patient, you'll burn those tires up and they'll be lapping you in 15 laps.
So I was thinking about the passing thing and during Daytona. Larry McReynolds, our guest this morning. Thank you so much, by the way, for doing this, Larry. Appreciate it, buddy.
Absolutely.
So, you know, in Formula One, they have a blocking rule that you can only put one block on someone, and then you're going to get penalized for it. When you watch these cars, and maybe it's just the super speedway, if they try to block two or three times with this aero package, the ass of that car is so loose that they're just begging for a problem.
Yeah, we saw a lot of handling issues in the early part of Speed Weeks in the Clash, and especially in the dual races on Thursday night. We went to Daytona with a bit of a different rule package where basically it's like everywhere else we go. It's a no ride height package. You just run the car as low as you can. NASCAR no longer are at Daytona and Talladega are handing out the rear springs and the rear shocks. It's pretty much run what you feel like your car is best suited for. And no question, we saw some issues in the early part of the week. But I kind of felt like as we got into the Daytona 500 after these guys had a couple of days to work on their cars after the duel, because the duel races were actually impound. Whatever you qualified with on Sunday, the car stayed in the garage area covered up, and that's what you raced in the duel. That some of the handling issues dissipated, but, yeah, when you block somebody, and you get hit in the back, it doesn't matter what kind of rules package we've got or what kind of aero package, you're probably going to get in trouble. You know, blocking has really become the norm at Daytona and Talladega.
Yeah.
But honestly, Jim, it's become the norm a lot of places. Go back to Homestead Miami Speedway, the last race of the year in 2016, when Carl Edwards tried to block Joey Logano on that late race restart, and obviously it didn't work out. And I think that's one reason Eric Almirola, I'm sure obviously very disappointed, but he really didn't have a problem with what Austin Dillon did because he truly was blocking. And as Darrell said, when you block, you've got to be willing to accept the consequences. And obviously that's what happened to Eric Almirola.
Yeah, and you know, but that to me, as a fan, and we were talking about it with seeing Austin win, but not only that, but seeing the young guys and the way they drive. And I know it's not about the Adderall thing. I don't want to get into that with him, but with Denny Hamlin and Bubba Wallace. But you like the fact that the young guys aren't going to take any crap from someone. If they feel they've been slighted, they address it. And maybe they're not the most eloquent at this time, but at least they're standing up for themselves and their teams. And as a fan, that's all I want.
And I'm saying that's a beautiful thing because that's what our sport had for so many years. And then we kind of lost that.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this group of young drivers that's coming in now, the way they were brought up and racing around short tracks around the country, you know, they're not going to take crap off these veterans. And I truly hope that doesn't change, that it doesn't go away as they become more of a veteran racer, because we kind of lost that for a few years.
I blame it on the car of tomorrow. That just, we were neutered when we got that car.
We took a big hit with that car. It's taken us a while to overcome it, but the good thing is it's in the rearview mirror. And the product we've got on the track right now, even going back to last year, and we really haven't changed a whole lot for this year. I know we had the changes for Daytona and Talladega. We've got the new Chevy Camaro. But most of the product that we had last year is the same thing we're going to be racing here in 2018.
Oh, the cars look, to see that Camaro out there look great. I would still like to see Ford switch over to a Mustang for next year. I'd love to see him run. See Mustangs and Camaros whipping around the track would be awesome.
Well, we know it appears Ford is going to have a new car coming out next year. I'm sure it's going to be a few months before they stay to it and unveil it. And I'm sure it'll be a few months before they truly claim whatever it's going to be. If you go back to last year, it was during the second Michigan race in August, kind of tied in with the Michigan track being close to Detroit when Chevrolet unveiled that new Camaro that they're racing this year.
Well, do you think, Larry, I mean, like, it's interesting to me just when we talk about Ford. A couple of years ago, we were all talking about how, you know, Roush was struggling with Ford and Ford really didn't have anybody up front. And then I'm watching Fords everywhere. And you see Roger Penske with these teams now and you know, Stuart Haas. And it's amazing to me how Ford really has some, and Yates obviously working on the motors. In my mind, they seem to be the strongest manufacturer this year.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say that just yet, Jim. You know, I know they won 10 races last year, but they won a lot of the unique races. Obviously, they won all four of the restrictor plate races. Kevin Harvick won the road course race at Sonoma. Brad Keselowski won Martinsville, a short track. Ryan Blaney won Pocono, which is a unique track. I do think from an aero standpoint, Ford is and I'm not going to say a whole lot. I do think they're a little bit behind the Toyota. I don't think we know enough about the Camaro yet to say, but the promising thing, to your point, I did see Kevin Harvick and that Ford team and Rodney Childers come to life at the end of last year.
Yeah.
And when he drove by Martin Truex Jr. late in that race at Texas, that told me that they've definitely got their act together.
Well, and it's, you know, obviously here in Detroit, we've had Roger on the show and you know, he was pretty adamant. Every time I would ask him about getting a third car, he's like, I don't need a third car. I've got two good drivers. I know what we're doing. We have the tech. And then all of a sudden with Blaney, when the opportunity, was that a function of the opportunity to get Ryan Blaney or confidence in Ford going forward?
I'm not, probably a little of both.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't think he would have put just anybody in that car. But the bottom line, Roger Penske is fine having a third car as long as the funding's there. You know, Roger Penske's not going to pay for it out of his pocket. And I think the funding came along, a good little race car driver with Ryan Blaney, and I'm sure some support from Ford. But sponsorship is the key. You know, talented drivers are important, but trust me, funding and sponsorship is king right now.
Would you be surprised? We always heard the rumors, I mean, that we'll see another manufacturer get into NASCAR?
Well, never say never. And I do know, listening to Brian France in his State of the Sport that he gave back during Media Week, he said, we really feel like we need at least one more manufacturer. And we would certainly embrace that. But kind of like I talked about funding for a third team, it's not a free ticket to ride. You know,
right.
for a manufacturer to come into NASCAR and be able to use NASCAR as a platform to promote their brand and their make, you know, you do have to write a check to do it. And I'm sure that's a big key.
Here's my theory. Volkswagen buys Dodge because Jeep and Ram would stay with FCA. Volkswagen buys Dodge to get that passenger presence and that performance presence in North America. They bring that Charger back to NASCAR, but it's a Volkswagen behind it.
Yeah, I hear Volkswagen. We obviously hear Dodge a lot. But you know, I would love to see Dodge come back. But if I was NASCAR, I would go, look, you guys got to make your mind up. You were here, you were gone. You were back here. You built a new Gen 6 car, and then you were gone. You know, somewhere you've got to make a long-term commitment to be here and to stay here long-term.
You know, it's the cool thing, Larry, as much as people would talk about the demise of NASCAR, watching Daytona, watching the young drivers, the conversation that you and I just had as we go forward with the sport, it seems to me like this. It feels like NASCAR has found its footing, and it's on an uptick again, doesn't it?
No, it is. Now, Jim, are we ever going to get back to where we were a decade ago, you know, 2004, 5, 6? You know, I don't know. I don't know if any sport will get back to where they were. But you know, obviously NASCAR has been where I have made my living for 37 years. And, yeah, I'm going to keep a positive attitude. I'm going to be a half-glass full type of a guy. And, you know, when I look at our sport right now, do we have some empty seats at a lot of tracks we go to? Yes, we do. But I always use Brooklyn, Michigan as a great example. Yeah, they took some seats out.
Yeah.
There's still, when we go there in June, when we go there in August, there's probably going to still be, you know, 5,000 or 10,000 empty seats. But there's still going to be 60,000 people there, and that does not even include an infield that is packed.
Oh, we camped there for a week. Yeah.
Yeah. My case point, yeah, we may have empty seats, but most weekends we still have a crowd equal to what just attended the Super Bowl in Minnesota a few weeks ago. Are our ratings down from where they were a decade ago? They are. But we're still second only to the NFL. And ratings for everything is down. Ratings for the Olympics are down right now.
Yeah.
So would I love to see it get back to where it was? Sure, and maybe it will. But I just think people, they have too many options of things to do today and ways of viewing a live and keeping up with a live sporting event.
Hey, they're putting a good product out. That's all. Like you said, I'm not going to waste my money on or my time on something that I don't perceive as a quality product. And racing in the United States right now, I think, is going to be as good across the board. IndyCar, the resurgence of open wheel racing, having Formula One on ESPN, and then the continuing NASCAR, just as big as it is, it's all good. It just makes us gearheads appreciate this. And with all these self-driving cars coming around the corner, we want to see people going out and fighting these things. I want to see a race car driver who has to work behind the wheel. I don't want the technology to overtake the driver. I like to watch those guys, and you pointed out so well during the race in Daytona, those guys were working their ass off to keep those cars from spinning.
Well, and that's what the drivers want to do. You know, they don't want cars that feel like that they're on cruise control and that anybody could do it. They, you know, it's like Atlanta this week, 500 miles at a racetrack where they're going to be slipping and sliding from green flag to checkered flag. That's what the drivers want to do. They want to feel like they have control of their race car and their talent can make a difference in the way that car performs.
Larry McReynolds, I appreciate, again, taking time out. I know it's just been a hectic couple of weeks, and we're looking forward to Atlanta as well. We'll all be watching, and it's always fun talking to you. You make me think. That's my favorite thing, man. You make me think about the sport and look at it through your eyes just even for a couple minutes and your perspective on it. Hey, last thing. You know, every time I interview a movie star or a celebrity, I always ask them if they kept something from a certain movie. You know, for example, in Bull Durham, Tim Robbins kept the hat, and he also kept the lace thing that he wore underneath the uniform. So from your period in NASCAR, what have you kept when you were a crew chief?
Wow. Honestly, Jim, probably, you know, a couple of things comes to mind. You know, I was fortunate enough to win 23 races.
Right.
And I actually have you wear a bunch of different hats when you're in victory lane, obviously taking pictures. I kept that bag of hats from every single one of those races, and they're over in my office at my shop. And then the other thing I have kept, 18 years as a crew chief, I have every folder of every race that I was a crew chief. I can look back and tell you at Richmond in 1987, what kind of front end settings we raced that day, because I have every folder from every race that I was crew chief.
That is awesome. Larry McReynolds, man, it's great talking to you again. We'll see you this weekend, and thanks for the time. We'll talk soon, okay?
No, thank you for having me, and like I always tell folks, you can follow me on Twitter, at LarryMac28. I love interacting with fans, especially during the race weekends, and try to answer as many questions as I can. Sometimes I can't get to them all, but that's Twitter, at LarryMac28.
You're the best. Thanks, Larry.
Take care, bud.